Hey there, this is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett, Empower Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And if you have company, you may or may not know it, okay? This is one of those little things that shows us we have more people hanging around us who we might have thought were somewhere else than we can even begin to fathom. Now, I know that firsthand. That's just been my experience. But the cool thing is Paul Davis, we've talked with him before. When he was here, he was talking about the life after death project. And so we kind of had a preview of that. But if you're listening to this for the first time, we'll back up. All right. This is an incredibly fascinating story. Paul has the book, An Atheist in Heaven, about Forrest J. Ackerman. Now, you may or may not know Forry. I'm going to let Paul set the thing up. Forry was a well-known horror aficionado. That was his, he loved horror movies, producing the whole nine yards. But he was also a devout, no ghosts, no, nothing like that existed. However, in the afterlife, he seems to have changed his tune and dramatically so. So Paul, who probably had the same tune of this can't be possible, or, you know, it's at least not going to happen ever to me, has a whole new life now that he and Forry are connected. Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Hi, Wendy. I like the way you put that. It's It sounds really strange to hear it, but strange
Surprise!
But true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so set it up. Set it up.
Well, first, let me tell your audience, my career has been as a filmmaker and television producer. And I'm known for the Transformer show, the original cartoons. My name is on like 80 of them as production coordinator. I wrote a bunch of the Star Wars books for George Lucas with my wife, Hollis. And then I had a career of producing about 10 motion pictures, about a little more than half are featured documentaries and the others with actors. Probably best known for Roswell, the Showtime movie with Kyle MacLachlan. And some of my documentaries are Jesus in India and the Sci-Fi Boys, The Artist and the Shaman. A new one coming out soon called Marilyn Monroe Declassified. And in 2013, I came out with the documentary feature, The Life After Death Project that you mentioned. It was on the Sci-Fi channel. And how did I even get into this? And why, 3 years after The Life After Death Project, would I be coming out with a 500-page book called An Atheist in Heaven, co-authored with Gary Schwartz, who's very well known in the life after death research field. Mm-hmm. And by the way, when I say 500 pages, don't be scared, because there's a lot of photography in there, photographic evidence of all the things that went into the Forry Ackerman life after death case. So Forry, as we called him, you described his connection to horror, but it was much, much more than the horror films. Science fiction was the main thing for him. He's the fellow that came up with sci-fi. Is an expression. He was born back in 1916, had a long life, died at age 92, December 4th of 2008. And Forry was a massively important person in the field of science fiction in terms of promoting it into the mainstream, because it was always considered, you know, not worthy of being called literature, just you know, something sort of camp or not to be taken seriously. But Forry changed all that through tremendous influence on many people that went into the field, became famous directors in Hollywood of science fiction movies. He was the editor of Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine. And he had a fantastic house, 18 rooms filled with memorabilia from the science fiction and horror films, his great collection. He called his house the Acker Mansion, and Ray Bradbury, the author, called it the Fort Knox of science fiction in its day. Doesn't exist anymore. As I say, he died in 2008. So that gives you the background. Now, the other part of the background, as you mentioned, is that Forry was an atheist. He was proud to be an atheist. He had no connection with religion from the time he was very young. He rejected it all. He never prayed, but not just not believing in God or an afterlife. He didn't believe in anything paranormal or that ESP was real or any of these phenomena that we associate with the paranormal. For him, it was all just fun fiction literature, but he didn't give it any credence. So as he reached about 90, you got to understand, I knew him for decades. I met him when I was a child filmmaker, and he encouraged my career. He was a mentor to me. Wonderful man. We were great friends. And as he became about 90, I proposed to him. I said, a problem. I said, Fari, you know, what if you're wrong? You know, you're so steadfast in your disbelief. And he said, well, you know, I seriously doubt that I'm wrong. You know, I've been an atheist my whole life, and I intend to be one till the day I die. He said, but, you know, if by chance I wake up to some big science fiction convention in the sky, you know, I'll be busy with reunions with my favorite horror film actors and producers, science fiction people. He said, but when the party dies down, he said, you know, maybe I would drop you a line. Then he would get very serious and say, you know, but Paul, you know, don't count on it. So wasn't going to happen.
Don't hold your breath.
Wasn't going to happen. But the thing is, Wendy, it did happen. And it didn't just happen once. After the first incident, which left physical evidence of his continuing existence, that happened in March of 2009 after a great tribute for him at the Egyptian Theater in Hollywood. And about a week later, it happened to me. First it happened to two Canadian producers who'd made a documentary.
Okay, so what was the first thing? What was the first thing?
Well, should I talk about the Canadian producers or what happened to me? Well, the Canadian producers had made a biography of Fari, and they were fun-loving guys. They rapped on his crypt the day of the tribute and said, you know, hi, Fari, you know, it's us, Mike and Ian. You know, we're here from Canada. We brought our film with us to show at your tribute. They didn't consider it disrespectful. They knew his great sense of humor. They thought he would have loved their rapping on his script. Well, they heard from him within about an hour on their computers. So how to tell it concisely? They were sharing a hostel room in Hollywood. They had their two computers side by side on a desk. And Mike McDonald from Halifax was trying to do a blog. And a CAPTCHA code came up, you know, the squiggly little letters, words and numbers so that like Facebook can know that you're not spamming Facebook. That there's a human being sending.
Yes, yes.
The CAPTCHA code was Fari's name. It came up Ackerman 000. Really freaked them out because, you know, rap, rap, rap on the grave. Ackerman 000 as a CAPTCHA code. These things are supposed to be random.
Yeah.
So they began discussing, you know, is he really dead? The other computer was asleep on the desk, not logged onto the internet, and a voice came out of it, according to Ian Johnston, the writer of that documentary. He said the voice said in a childlike voice, oh my gosh, no way, meaning, oh my gosh, no way am I dead. And they were shocked. They discovered that that voice is an animated emoticon that you can find on YouTube, but it wasn't in his hard drive. He wasn't logged into YouTube, and it came as a response to what they had just said. So that's the way it all started. You had Ian, the skeptic and non-believer, with the voice coming out of his computer. You had Mike McDonald, who was a believer in ghosts, who said he'd lived in haunted houses before, who told me about this, saying, you know, we heard from Fari. Well, I was a skeptic. I had reasons to have somewhat of an open mind. All right. I'll just mention 30 seconds, 60 seconds about that. I had been a production coordinator on F. Lee Bailey's show, Lie Detector. He's the famous lawyer. You know, he was one of O.J. Simpson's lawyers.
Yeah.
Very controversial lawyer. But he had a television show. He'd hook up people to a lie detector. They'd come in with some fascinating story. And he'd either say, congratulations, your story is true, or a lie detector says you made this all up. He'd confront them. So one of the people we brought in was Dorothy Allison, a psychic detective from New Jersey who had commendation letters from police departments of how she had helped them find missing persons, including murder victims. So she came out truthful. I was segment coordinator of the show. So yes, after that, I had an open mind that there could be something had to explain how she was getting this information from deceased people about, you know, where their body might be found. And then the body's found. So it opened my mind, but nothing could ever happen to me until the week after that tribute, I got the first line from Fari.
So what did it say?
Well, you want to know about the line.
Uh-huh.
He was an editor, as I said, of a magazine. So it came in a form like an editor would do it. I was alone in our vacation house in Santa Fe. Doors are locked. I printed out a 24-page document to go over for tax purposes. It was business calls, meetings from the past year, just like a little diary dates, little shorthand things. And I know the document was absolutely normal. You know, I pressed a print command. I was gone for an hour and a half. I came back to the house. The ink was dry. It was normal. So far, we have no story. But I tossed it down on the bed. I was out of the room, in the bathroom for maybe 5 minutes. And when I came out, the document had been physically changed in a deliberate way. This was one of the most shocking moments of my life.
Mm-hmm.
When I say deliberate way, you could see that a number of words had been blacked out very neatly and precisely, like somebody intended it. This isn't water dripping from a ceiling on a document or a leaky pen in a bed. This is deliberate. And it was still moist. So it had just happened. I was the only one there. Honestly, Wendy, at that moment, if I have to say what it feels like to be in the presence of a ghost, you know, that was it. It all became real for me then. I didn't know what it meant. I was afraid. You know, a black spot, you know, was this a warning of imminent death? This is all described in our new book, An Atheist in Heaven, in great detail.
Yes.
And the
yes.
fact that I took this ink to first one university and then a college. It went to the top people in chemistry departments, experts in inks and solvents and dyes and paints. And they began studies on this at my request that actually went on for 3 years. They could never replicate it. They could never explain how it could have happened based on what the chemistry was. And one of the professors began to have unexplained things happening to him in the course of doing the investigation. So he really turned around. He went from, you know, the scoffing, I'll solve this for you in a day, to 3 years later, you know, wow, you know, how many times has Fari been in touch with me since I started this thing?
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, Wendy, I wrote the book with Gary Schwartz, An Atheist in Heaven, you know, 3 years after making the documentary, because academic people said, you need a book. You've had scientists working on this. You have scientific reports and data. There are details to the story and all the events that happened that never got into your documentary. In the glossary of An Atheist in Heaven, which, by the way, you can find at Amazon, either ebook or hardback. In the glossary, there's over 100 incidents that I think refer or have some kind of origination or connection with Fari Ackerman. And then there were 140 paranormal incidents of the last few years that are discussed in the book. So I really took this on as a major project, feeling a great sense of responsibility. I figured out the meaning of that ink blot eventually, and when it dawned on me, it was a delightful shock because I realized Fari, who loved wordplay, had a sense of humor, loved puns, loved twists of words, loved to find names within names. that he had sent me a message, which the equivalent of like a little thank you for my being one of the speakers at his tribute. Mm-hmm. And he had done it with a wordplay game like he always did. And so many of the events that have happened have had his personality behind it. So here's the lesson. Here's my message. I went from skeptic. I was never an atheist, but I cautiously believed maybe this stuff could be true based on the show Lie Detector. But it had never happened to me until now. Now what I have to say is the accumulation of the evidence is massive. And it's not just from the kind of physical things I'm talking about here. We've had instrumental transcommunication. We've had electronic voice phenomenon. We've had absolutely extraordinary facts coming through mediums who could not have known those facts of their own knowledge. There have been an enormous number of synchronicities. There have been apports, objects that disappear and are never seen again, or objects that disappear and then appear like right in front of your nose where you would have seen it. You're looking for it for 3 days and then what? It's right next to your computer and there's no one who it physically, you know, would have put it there. No one in the family or, you know, no one who was around. So many unexplained things from many fields of knowledge all coming together that that's why we have a subtitle, The Ultimate Evidence for Life After Death. Mm-hmm. After an atheist in heaven, we put a question mark because we want the reader to decide. But I've decided that this is a very hopeful thing, because for anybody who may be a skeptic about what they're taught in their religion, right? Religions kind of lay it out for you simply. They almost all say the same thing: live a good life, don't sin, behave, and you'll end up in heaven, right? Okay. It sounds good, but, you know, it's not enough for a lot of inquiring scientific minds, right?
Yes.
But my inquiring scientific mind now tells me that life goes on after the physical body dies, and personality is retained, and there can be a continuing friendship and interaction that continues for years after a person is deceased. I never, never would have said this before, and now I'm 100%. Convinced.
See, I love this. I love it. And if you're contemplating reading the book and that 500 page thing is a little intimidating, forget it. This it's like butter. Going through this, the stories are so fascinating. The multiple levels of connection of things appearing, disappearing, sounds, bits and pieces, fragments of information, or like your stuff with the songs on the iPod playing, different things. Before I was reading this, preparing, I kept being drawn to Phantom of the Opera. So we watched it. It's one of my favorites. I love it. We've got the DVD, so I watched it. And then I kept singing. I thought, well, I've got to do this for my show. I'm going to be doing a new show. So this is one of the things I have to play because it's just such a striking piece. And then I'm reading the book and reading about how Forey was a huge fan of Phantom of the Opera. And just to give you an idea of the sense of humor, he was going to be the Phantom, and then Oprah would be the lovely person who then unmasks the Phantom, and he was going to call it Phantom of the Opera. And I'm like, oh my gosh, here's the Forey connection from totally out of the blue. All of a sudden, I had no interest until I started reading the book. And that's the little things that happen when you, as a reader or as somebody who's interested, start getting little nudges about things that maybe can't be explained and seem like synchronicity.
Wendy, you know, with the Phantom of the Opera, one of the incidents I talk about in the book was on a very appropriate day when I had been with very close friends of Forey, and he had been the subject of conversation all afternoon. I think he likes that, you know, he likes the attention. And I got back into my car. I have an iPod with thousands of pieces of music on it, and I had been listening to Bob Dylan. And I turn on my car, the iPod comes on. Bah, 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 bah. It's the beginning of Phantom of the Opera.
Yes.
I didn't set it at that. I didn't make that happen. And Forey, there's been a couple of times at very Forey moments that my iPod by itself plays Phantom of the Opera. But that's just one of, you know,
thousands of instances.
Yeah, well, At least 100, because we've listed 140 at the end of the book. I'm not going to say thousands yet, but if I live to be an old man, yeah.
I'm thinking that you're going to pass that tab. The thing is, when you got connected with these other people, like when you're starting to deal with Mark Macy, I think some really interesting things happened in regard to computer instances, and even Gary Schwartz. The anomalies that happened with your communications that Borey seems to have a part in are just fabulous and fascinating.
You know, and some of them, a brilliant fiction writer couldn't invent these things. They're so strange. For example, the incident with the orange juice. Well, Borey had a cat that he called Mr. Orange. And he frequently went to the Magic Castle, which is on Orange, I think it's Drive in Hollywood. One of his close friends, Sean Fernald, was making a movie called Blood Orange. So, that, you know, Borey had this orange connection, right? Mm-hmm. Well, one day, when Gary Schwartz had been attempting to communicate with Borey using his computer sensors and a program he's been experimenting with that he designed to attempt to communicate with spirits through very sensitive sensors. He's working on the science of this. He's at University of Arizona. This is an author who has a PhD from Harvard, who taught at Yale. He's a brilliant mind in this field. So he's working on this attempt. And there was a day when he and his wife had said, we're out of orange juice. We got to pick up some orange juice during the day. And Gary, at one point during the day, looked in the refrigerator and said, oh, Rhonda, you picked up the orange juice. Thank you. Wow, this has a lot of sediment in it here. It looks like it's been sitting here for a long time. Simply Orange was the brand. And she said, what are you talking about? I didn't pick up the orange juice. I didn't have time. I thought you got it. Now you have to understand they don't have a maid. There was nobody that could have put that orange juice there. Now this was right when I came to visit him, and I was doing some filming, and I had driven there. And when I left him, I drove from his house in Tucson to the vacation house I told you about that we have in Santa Fe. And when I got to the house, and nobody had been there for a long time in terms of tenants or anything, I opened the refrigerator and there was the same brand of orange juice, Simply Orange, in my refrigerator. And it was just, I had to laugh. And I did find out why the orange juice was in my refrigerator. You know, there's a lady who checks up on the house every once in a while. She bought some orange juice and then she realized it wasn't the right type for her diet, and she was checking up on my house, so she left it in the refrigerator. So we call this a synchronicity. It's like, okay, the orange juice connects with Borey, the orange concept does, and Gary Schwartz and his wife have that experience, and then I go to my house, and there it is, still there for me. So a skeptic would say, coincidence. Mere coincidence, Yeah. Well, life sometimes does play coincidences on us, It's just the table of odds, probabilities, right? But when someone starts being the recipient of one after another, after another, after another, and they all have an emotional meaning that points to the same guy, in this case, Borey, you have to say, how many does it take? How many incidents does it take that before you start saying, wait a minute, there's really something deliberate at work here? And when you combine those synchronicities with the physical phenomena, the instrumental transcommunication, which that's like the computer talking to the documentary filmmakers, when our instruments give us what seems to be communication from someone who's deceased, and it could be a computer. It could be a video camera, something that's recorded. It could be a telephone call from somebody that's deceased. Happened twice with my father-in-law. where someone received phone calls that said it was from Frank Goodman's phone. Within 5 minutes, two of his phones rang saying Frank Goodman. Frank Goodman had died that earlier that day. So that's, we call that instrumental transcommunication. And then we have, the physical phenomena, what the mediums give us. Skeptic Dr. Michael Shermer.
Hold on. Hold that thought. We're going to get with the skeptic. Okay. And in terms of examples, there are two I also want to add as we're going down this laundry list of things. The ceiling fans that you guys have in your house, we'll elaborate later. And the cat, Forey Ackerman, the cat.
Okay.
Because those are great. All right. And then we'll also deal with Michael Shermer, the skeptic. All right. So a lot of stuff to get into. An Atheist in Heaven. We're talking with filmmaker Paul Davids, The Ultimate Evidence for Life After Death. This is so cool. Don't go anywhere. More to come.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org. And after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Insta-Do. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home. But these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners. And we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Atheist in Heaven, we're talking with the author, Paul Davids, and it's the ultimate evidence for life after death. Where is it? Forey Ackerman is quite active, if you believe all of the stuff that he's doing in the book. And there's a laundry list. You said there were only 124, but that's really a pretty decent sized list. And my guess is when they told you to keep track of certain things that were happening with your ceiling fan, you didn't document all that. So that could add probably another 2 pages. All right.
Yeah, I think so. 142, not 124. Listen, we have to talk about something that just happened.
Okay.
Now tell me that you chose deliberately the ad that would be filling the airtime when
I did not know.
Who chose it? How did that happen? Do you know? Did you listen to what the first ad was?
No.
Were you paying attention? Discover the Forest? DiscovertheForest.com? You heard it.
I've heard these so many times right now. It's like they just go in one ear and out the other. I'm sorry. But yeah, Discover the Forest. Okay, see, yes. There he is with his sense of humor.
Forest J. Ackerman. That's the kind of thing. Now, look. Did somebody do that deliberately? Did your program manager know we were talking about Forrest J. Ackerman and just decide he was going to pull a fast one on us? Or did that just happen?
He did not know. Nobody knew until I gave the Skype information for you. And this was totally random. Yeah, there was no pre-planning on our part. And I've got, by the way, an orange teacup that I've been drinking. And I've got half an orange on the cabinet downstairs thinking, well, I need to save that. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, there's the orange connection. And I don't usually grab this particular. I'm thinking, oh, this joke's on me.
But listen, before we drop this subject and move on, I wrote down some of the things in that ad. And it says, come to the forest. It's not so far away. So and then it said you'll find ladybugs and caterpillars, you know. Okay, creepy, crawly things like Fairy Light.
Uh-huh.
And it said, and in the forest, you'll discover the other you.
That's excellent.
I couldn't have written, you know. It's
That's
just,
excellent.
This is what
no,
happens.
It went right over my head.
I'm trained now to observe these things, and it just happens to me all the time. Well, you want to talk about ceiling fans next, right?
Well, yeah, but the forest thing was pretty good. Thank you for pointing that out, because we couldn't have planned that. It couldn't have been written better. All right. So I knew he was going to show up. I know he has a hand in all of this. And
you know, something has happened in a lot of the radio shows I've done. In the last one, the moderator asked for a sign from him, and it was a Skype interview. And while she's talking, the image of the Skype on her computer, the rectangle, begins fading and becomes a ghost image that she can see through to see the icons on her desktop behind her. So it provided a ghost. And I had said in the conversation, you know, I don't know what to call him, a spirit, or, you know, do you mind the term ghost?
And I don't see him as a ghost. I see him as he's just the other him. Yeah, is exactly what it says. It's just we can't see him.
But, well, there's also the friendly ghost that was in, there was a television series maybe before your time called Topper.
Oh, yes. I loved it. I saw reruns. Uh-huh.
Right. And Topper lived with with two friendly ghosts that looked in on everything in his life. And we're very concerned about him, you know. And so that's my life has become Topper, and you can't top it.
It's no, different. You can't. Funny.
So okay. Ceiling fans. So
yes.
A couple of years ago, we did a big remodel in our California bungalow house in Los Angeles, built a really nice kitchen. It has now two ceiling fans across the room from one another, and the fans also have lights. So my wife and I began to notice that the fans and or the lights would go on by themselves at odd times. We hadn't pushed any button. Now, there is a wireless, you know, remote control for these things. So, of course, the first logical thing you're going to say is it must be getting some signal that's just passing through the atmosphere that's causing it to go on. So you want to think that. But there were times when both fans would go on at the same time. And they operate at different wavelengths, right? So you'd need two different signals. So I got the idea at one point to say, Fari, I don't know if you're involved with this, but can we use this as a means of communication? Let's label the fan near the breakfast nook the good news fan. And if there's something really good happening, something we should be happy about, maybe we don't even know it yet, but you do, you know, turn on the fan. The better the news, make the make the fan spin faster. So, and I said, if we've won the lottery, turn on the light and spin the fan fast, you know. And then the other one we called the bad news fan.
And yeah.
I said, Fari, if we need to watch our back, you know, if dark clouds are gathering and we need to be careful or something not so good may be happening, we might not even be aware of it. How about turning on the bad news fan? And then if catastrophe is going to strike, turn on the bad news fan really fast and turn on that light. Well, I noticed a correlation between the fans and what was happening in our lives. It was pretty astonishing. And sometimes the fans would know more than we did. For example, we were very happy and excited. At one point, we thought we were going to buy a big, huge new house. And the bad news fan went on full speed with the light. And I thought, Fari, you know, come on, get with the program. This is good news, really. This is a short sale. We're going to get this at an incredible bargain. Well, the bargain was too good to be true, right? The house had the worst termite report anyone had ever seen. You know, it had a rotting structure. And it had like 20 liens against it. So it could never get a mortgage. So the deal, of course, fell through. So, you know, okay, you could say another coincidence. But I have noticed that these fans do correspond often to what's going on in our lives. And we've had the good news fan going crazy the last few days. And there has been something that I consider good news that's been going on that's important. And I guess the last point to make
about
this.
Can you share that? Wait. That's like a tease. That's a big fat carrot.
It's a big tease. Let's say it's something difficult to talk about, but let's say that there was some legal issues dealing with one of my movies in particular, where a law firm is telling me everything is going to go, looks like everything's going to go my way. So something along those lines.
Okay, excellent.
Something I've been worried about. But here's the last point about the fans.
Yes.
A long time had gone by with nothing happening with the fans. And I said to my wife, have you noticed? I mean, do you think this means, you know, we're not going to hear from Fari anymore? Now, what does this mean? And like within an hour, the good news fan goes on. Okay. It's like in response to what I've said. So that's what life is like at the home of Paul Davids now.
Yes.
And you can read all about it in our new book, just came out last month, An Atheist in Heaven. Please go to Amazon. And even this 500-page hardback, beautiful book filled with evidentiary photos and a great story. It's all true.
But it's got tons of stuff. It's not all just, tons, I mean.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, there's the hardback. And for those of you that like ebooks, there's the ebook at Amazon too. So just for a few books, this can enter your life. And a number of people who've read this, by the way, have then had things happen to them that they tell me about. And that's crazy too, because I've had people ask Fari for a sign when they're reading the book. And someone who's reading an ebook, and the sign she got was the book began advancing pages by itself on her cell phone, page after page, sweeping to a certain page and highlighting two paragraphs in blue. How's that for a message?
See that, and that's why I'm not asking for a message. It's already here. My phone, I don't usually have this phone here, but it keeps ringing like somebody is trying to get, I've got the handset number two, and to find the handset, you would punch the other button to page it. Well, there's nobody to page the phone, and it keeps going off. I'm like, okay. And it just says once. So as we're talking, that's the little anomaly that is entertaining me at the moment.
Yeah.
Because I know it shouldn't be happening.
Plus your advertisement, discover the forest, come to the forest. You know, discover the other you.
Get a clue.
I discovered the other me because of Forrest J. Ackerman. And the other me is somebody who says, yeah, there are spirits. Yeah, they're around us. Yes, they communicate with us. There is life after death. We grieve so much when we lose a person physically. We're so sad. You know, there's never a, you know, there's always tears at funerals.
Yes.
And there's the great intense suffering. We've lost that person forever. They'll never talk to us again. We'll never smile for us again. And when you lose a parent, you know, or a brother or sister or a close friend, it tears you up for a long time. But if we can know that life does go on, it changes form. It's the deal we're dealt when we come into this body. You know, we didn't invent it. We don't know why we're here. We don't know what was going on for us in the billions of years that went before we ended up here. But here we are for a short period of time, and we always neglect to remember that this is temporary. And I think it's a lot like the caterpillar. Oh, caterpillars. That's the other thing that was in your Discover the Forest ad,
yes,
wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
The caterpillar. The caterpillar turns into a butterfly.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a good parallel, I think, for what really happens when we pass away. So I have a more, says Discover the Other You, I have a more optimistic self now. Mm-hmm. That I look at life differently, and the universe keeps playing these games with me.
Okay, I also want to get into the pet thing, because when losing a pet is devastating, and this happens to be a pet that was named after Forey. Ian, you mentioned him earlier, one of the Canadians.
Yeah, Ian Johnston in Toronto. Mm-hmm.
Ian's a big fan of Forey, so here's the cat.
Well, Ian was the writer of the documentary about Forey. He's the one whose computer said to him, oh, my gosh, no way. Well, he named his cat.
Hold on. Tell that story, because that's in the book, but people aren't going to know what it is.
Oh, I did mention that. When I mentioned that the one computer had the CAPTCHA code after they wrapped on Forey's crypt.
Yes.
And it had his name. And then the other computer, when they said, is he really dead? The other computer blurted out, oh my gosh, no way. And it was that animated emoticon, but no explanation.
Okay, so for me, who did not get that in the first go round.
Yeah, that's what it was. So here's the guy that happened to, Ian Paul Johnston.
Yes, the reenactment.
And one other thing that happened to him was that he went into a bookstore at random in Ontario, Canada. He lives in Toronto now, and he stumbled on a box, a cardboard box on the floor where like he could trip on it in the back of this bookstore. And he said, oh, I wonder what this is. And he rummaged through it. Well, would you believe it was filled with articles about Forrest J. Ackerman, original correspondence from Forrest J. Ackerman, manuscripts from Forey, or letters to him asking him to write vampire jokes. It was a treasure trove of Ackerman things. He asked the guy that owned the bookstore, you know, how much do you want to sell that for? And the guy said, oh, you know, $50 and it's yours. Well, $50, I mean, Ian probably would have paid $1,000 for it right there, you know. And this box and its documents actually helped me solve some of the things in the mystery of the communications I've had. When I went through it document by document, I found very, very important things. Okay, so Ian, let's go back to the cat. Ian had a cat he named Forrest J. Ackerman after he did the documentary. Well, the cat passed away. And after it passed away, there were two phenomena he experienced. One was feeling the cat jump up on him in the middle of the night on his bed, which is something the cat used to do. But there's no physical cat there. He felt this happen repeatedly, and he's sure he wasn't dreaming. Mm-hmm. Here's the other thing. Cat balls, the little toys, would show up on the floor of his apartment. Mm-hmm. It's a very small apartment. Basically, it's one room plus a bedroom and a bathroom. And one room for everything else. It had the kitchen, dining room, living room. That's it. So small. And he was sure he'd cleaned up all the cat balls, but new cat balls kept showing up. He said that once there was a flood in the apartment. He's at a basement level in the apartment building. And a flood, so a couple inches of water on the floor. He said at that point, surely he cleaned up all the cat balls. You know, they had to move every piece of furniture. They had to drain the water out of there. Still, the cat balls kept showing up after that. And one of them showed up on the day that I was in Canada. I went over to his apartment, and I wanted to investigate that book, that box of Forey Ackerman documents. And a cat ball had shown up that morning, he said. So I said, look, let's do an experiment with this. Let's put this cat ball right by the sink on the floor. And let's see if it's moved in the morning. So I said, okay, we can do that, but I'm going to have to leave the house at the same time you are, because I have to house sit for a friend. I made a promise, and I'm playing a baseball game, and I won't be back till morning. So he said, I'll check it in the morning. Well, he let me know by email, because I'd already left Canada that next day. He let me know by email that the cat ball was gone the next morning. It was not near the sink. It was not there. So there you are.
So there you go. Yeah, well, see, that's what I think is fascinating. Even the cat named Forey J. Ackerman, Forrest the cat, is also an enigma who insists on coming back to play.
Yes. You know, I was going to mention something about Skeptic.
Yes, Michael Shermer.
Shermer. He's the executive director of the Skeptic Society, and he's the publisher of Skeptic Magazine. So except for maybe the Amazing Randy, he's King Skeptic in the United States.
Yes.
Maybe the world. And the reason I was going to mention him, the context was I talked about how all these different fields of knowledge came into play in validating the Ackerman communication case. You know, that we had the apports, we had instrumental transcommunication, we had mediums, we had synchronicities, we had physical phenomena. All these different kinds of things. And Dr. Shermer had written in Scientific American that it's the consilience of evidence from related fields all pointing in the same direction to validate a certain theory that leads to advances in science. And the point that Gary Schwartz and I make in An Atheist in Heaven, in our new book, is that what we have in the Forey Ackerman case is a consilience of evidence from all these different fields, all pointing in the same direction, that life goes on. Forey's still aware of us. His personality is intact, and the friendship continues, and he's still in touch. And science is helping us to prove that. So what we need now is we need scientists to read this book. We need chemists to read this book and see the chemical studies and the research that led the chemists to the opinion that there are things in this that can't be explained by science, and that felt that they had contact to after. So we need the scientific community to begin to take it seriously and stop ridiculing and debunking and penalizing people for trying to take it seriously in the academic community.
Part of this, I think, is happening when you do have somebody who's done so much work on this, Dr. Gary Schwartz. He's one of the ones, The Afterlife. If you're listening, The Afterlife Experiments, I recommend that. Read that. That's one of the a really wonderful book talking about experiments they've done with mediums. And so he's extremely knowledgeable about how this stuff happens. He's the one who's giving you the terminology, and one of his things that he's calling the instrumental transcommunication. I wouldn't have, what the heck? So he has the terminology for this and how they vet something that's happened, and, you know, whether it's credible or not.
Wendy, we call it ITC for short, instrumental transcommunication.
Okay. And so, and that means for us who haven't used these kind of terms and just have it happen?
It's when our instrumentality, whether it be a computer, a telephone, a video camera, a tape recorder, brings us some tangible communication or sign from somebody who's deceased. It's the those who exist in another realm, the other side, if you will, reaching out and making contact with us through our own machines. They couldn't have done that. They couldn't have done it 150 years ago. Machines didn't exist.
Well, like with my nightlights, I have an experience where constantly, 24/7, since 1997, my communication has come through this interacting thing with nightlights, and it happens wherever I go. I've had electricity, you know, checked to make sure that there's nothing faulty in the wiring, and then I finally gave up on doing that because it was obvious that it wasn't the wiring. But that would be an ITC, correct?
These nightlights, are they like floating fireflies, or are they like...
No, these are like, it's an actual physical light bulb. when it first started happening, it happened with the bulb that's supposed to be affected by light. You know, you darken the room, the light comes on. And what I noticed was it was flickering and doing all sorts of stuff. There was no shift in the light. And I thought, well, okay, then I need to figure out what's happening because something is happening. Well, after a while, and I figured out something was happening, it started doing it with regular night lights that are supposed to stay on 24/7. So right now I have two in my house, one in the bedroom and one in the living room, that do their little little blink flicker stuff like that to let me know. You'd say hello, hello. And when I go to bed at night, they go off because they are not night lights. So when I go to bed, turn the lights off, they're off too. And I don't ever touch them. I don't have to. But that is the communication, in my opinion. So I'm guessing that would be called the ITC.
Because it involves it's a light bulb, as you say, right?
An electronic, yeah. It's a light bulb. And the one I've had recently is 20 years old.
The DVD set of the Life After Death Project. This is what I made first before writing An Atheist in Heaven. This came out in 2013. There's an incredibly appropriate sequence to what we're talking about with Lynn Katai, who's talking about what happened the day that her mother died. And that that her son was up in his room and screaming, "Mommy, mommy, mommy, you have to come. You have to see this. You have to see this." They had been having strange things happen, like with the refrigerator and other things throughout the day. Well, she came in and looked at a light bulb in his room that was turned off. And the light bulb became glowed with blue. Mm-hmm. And it became brighter and brighter and brighter, and then dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. But there was nothing obviously electronic that would explain that.
No. And I've done it, the night light, when the 10-year anniversary of this thing happening, the light in the backyard. And I had a friend, a young lady who was staying with me, and I said, "Come look at this. You'll never see it again." And I showed her, and the light was, when you turn the switch on and off, the switch was off. And the bulb was glowing a wonderful orange. It stayed that way for about a week or so. Those are instances where something else is happening and they have access to that electricity, and that's all it takes.
Have you had any feeling as to who might be in touch with you through that? Is it a person? Is it an angel? Is it, what is it?
What it calls itself is a non-corporeal being, and it's referred to, it calls itself the energy, and it's a, I did a channeling. I learned how to channel. I learned the whole nine yards of trying to figure out improving my telepathy, improving my ability to pick up, be intuitive, all that stuff I had no intention of doing, but I had to figure out why this was happening. And so the words are specific, non-corporeal being. And it says, this being, that it's basically what we are, except it doesn't have a body. And that it doesn't need a body, but it has access to the kinds of information that we might be interested in or might be helpful, but it doesn't call itself an angel. So sure. I just refer to it as the energy. Yeah, a lot of people, it's like, what is this thing? Well, what it did and what it does is encourage someone like me to take the game up to the next level and work on your intuition, work on your linear types of thinking and start becoming more, free flow, and just begin to trust this other element that we have. That's our ESP, extrasensory, whatever, telepathic awareness. That it's absolutely incredible once you start doing that. But that's been my incentive. And like I said, it started in 1997. So, but when I connect with the stuff that you're doing, and you've got this wonderful documentation where you have been meticulous in, putting this down. I wrote a little book, Talking to Nightlights, and that was just the beginning. It's incredible the stuff that's happened since then, but I wouldn't have been prepared for it if I hadn't done the math, the homework, and tried to expand my horizons in terms of getting an education on what happens with paranormal stuff, so I wouldn't be surprised. I should say.
Wendy, do you find, I'll be the interviewer now for a minute. Do you find that these things happen at times that you can't predict, you can't expect, you can't make it happen or ask for it to happen, that it just happens when it wants to happen? Or do you feel that you can elicit it?
I don't demand And that's one thing. There's an ego thing when you make demands, and there's a different energy set, a mindset that we go into when we have this ordering a thing. Now, I allow it, or I am receptive is a good word. But when I start trying to control that element, then I don't. It's beyond my control, I should say. Does that make
mm-hmm.
sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I've found that most of the time, the things that have happened from Fari have happened at his initiation. And I haven't known how to expect it. And suddenly I'm incredibly surprised by something.
It's like the commercial.
Like the commercials. Yeah. Come to the forest. I mean, that mm-hmm. blows me away. I hope you'll play that again at the end of the show. I want to hear it again. But, just some of the things that have happened to me have been just really obvious, like when a mask pops off the wall, flies over a We Shall bead mask, pops over a lampshade and lands at my feet, or when a mask of Fari goes across the room on its own.
You gotta read the book.
Yeah, the bottom line is, yes, let this be the beginning. We've had an hour together. Let this be the beginning. Please look for An Atheist in Heaven at Amazon.com, either for ebook or the hardback. And then the movie that I did first is The Life After Death Project. And that's two DVDs in one. It was on Sci-Fi. It's all true. I swear to it. It's all true.
You won't be disappointed, okay? So take the next step, do the investigation, the exploring, and be prepared for some surprises and anomalies. You may experience them as you get into this material. I'm Wendy Garrett. This is Conscious Living and Power Radio. We're going to connect with Paul again on another show later. So take care. Until next time.